Welcome to the Citizens for Health radio show on Building Fortunes Radio with your hosts, Jim Turner and Peter Mingles. Make sure you check us out by clicking on the Citizens for Health radio show link on buildingfortunesradio.com. That's www.buildingfortunesradio.com. Citizens for Health provides over 100,000 supporters with consumer news, action alerts, and opportunities to take action. For nearly two decades, Citizens for Health has been a nonprofit pioneer in the natural health freedom movement. The Citizens for Health Education Foundation offers tools to inform the public of health issues and educate and influence policymakers. Jim Turner is here to spread the word about some of the most interesting topics that can affect your world, from the dangers of mislabeled or dangerous products to the questions and concerns of vaccines. You'll want to listen to Jim as he speaks on behalf of Citizens for Health. And now, on to our show with Jim Turner and Peter Mingles. Take it away, Peter.
Hello, everyone. Peter Mingles here. You're listening to us on Building Fortunes Radio. It's www.buildingfortunesradio.com. It's Friday. It's noon Eastern Time. And for those people that like us to date these radio shows, it is June 25th of 2021. So June 25th of 2021. However, even though that's when we're doing the show, you can always pick up the archives if you go to buildingfortunesradio.com/citizens. You'll be able to hear this as well as the previous ones. One of the reasons why I say, you know, you could take a look at the date of when we did this live versus you could listen to this stuff anytime. Jim Turner is an attorney for Citizens for Health. They have a great website, citizens.org. You probably want to write that down. Citizens.org, and sign up for the newsletter, so this way at least you get reminded of the cool things that they do. But Jim Turner has been an attorney for a really long time, decades long. I always have the delicate balance of saying, like, he's been something for a really long time, which means he's kind of old like me. So, but that also means, like, lots of experience and lots of great stories and lots of wisdom when applied the right way. So, right, so that's a good thing. So Jim's been an attorney for a real long time for Citizens for Health, again, citizens.org. And we started doing this radio show as a result of me wanting to have a microphone way back in 2012, beginning part of 2013, because I felt that sometimes things that need to be said couldn't be said or wouldn't be said because for whatever reason. And I said, you know, I want to start my own radio show, buildingfortunesradio.com. I needed some really great guest speakers. And I had met Jim as a result of, you know, some business and some other stuff that we were working on. And I said, you know, this gentleman, I didn't know how smart he was way back then. I knew he was smart. I didn't know how smart he was way back then. But when we first started this radio show, we started to do it, and it's turned into a weekly radio show. Actually, it started as a weekly radio show, continues as a weekly radio show. And if you jump in on any one of the radio shows, I promise you, you will get a lesson. You will learn something new. So you can share any date, including today's, which is June 25th of 2021. So having said that, it's a really interesting time. And because of Jim or all the other things, you know, great accolades I can give to Jim Turner, he's really opened up my mind to a lot of things. So, and real sophisticated, if you will, different levels of thinking and resources. So we've spoken everything from 5G to smart meters, you know, on your phone, your house, like the electric meters. We've spoken about everything from acupuncture needles to nutritional supplements to homeopathy. But recently, obviously, with COVID, we've really been kind of stuck on this one. And because Jim's vast experience in the vaccine environment, this one is always still very perplexing for me because every week as I do my studies and I get information from all different types of people, I am still perplexed on how in the world can we be pushing something that is so questionable as far as if it's safe and effective. And if you've ever heard that term before, safe and effective, I think it became one word, you know, as far as many times you've probably heard it related to vaccines or other stuff related to the FDA. So having said that, Jim, we're going to open this up by saying, first of all, thanks for being here, as usual. I really appreciate you being here, and we'll talk about whatever we're going to talk about on the next half hour to 45 minutes.
Well, I'm glad to be here, Peter. What do you want to, how do we want to start? What's your...
Well, I, you know, every day I take a look at what are they doing with vaccines or whatever we're going to call a vaccine, you know, the gene therapy stuff that they have going on. And I read in the newspapers and the publications and from real legitimate doctors and people that maybe even made the mRNA vaccine that, you know, the people that are knowledgeable, many of them don't trust this process to be injected into 100% of the people. And I look at, on the other side, I take a look at the government saying you got to get jabbed, and I take a look at employers saying you got to get jabbed, and schools saying you got to get jabbed, and all those types of issues. And I'm like, why in the world is there such a push on everyone getting jabbed by this thing that has so many potential side effects and has not really been tested long-term studies? And there's enough, and I'm rambling here, but there's enough jabs in arms right now for us to say, okay, now we can wait a little bit and we can kind of see what's going on, because we know the virus is going to mutate and all that other sort of stuff. So there's not even been any, I'll use Anthony Fauci's post-marketing research, yet been done, and it's been like almost a half a year since we've been jabbing people. So I want to open up the conversation about the vaccines, the mandatory mandates, the vaccine passport, the push as far as the G7 summit that they had. You can see the writing on the wall. In Europe, they're looking for a passport. You know, Biden sitting there agreeing with a lot of things that are going on, so there's probably going to be a push here for some level of some passport. And the continuous employees that are being pushed by their employers to get vaccinated. So I'll let you begin this however you want to begin it.
Well, these issues are long-standing issues about vaccination. I think I've mentioned on the show in the past that back in 1970, I was asked by the former Secretary of Health and Human Services to take a look at vaccine regulation. He said that when he was secretary, he had learned subsequently after leaving office that things had been going on in vaccine regulation that were not things that he would have liked to have been going on if he'd known about them. And I was working at that time with Ralph Nader and Ralph Nader's group, and he called me as the food and drug person there, and we had a discussion. And then he introduced me to a number of people, both inside and outside of the government, who were involved in vaccine questions. And it was frankly a mess. I mean, a total mess. Vaccines were regulated at that point by NIH. It was a subdivision of NIH that regulated them and had been regulating for a long time. There was a huge controversy about the efficacy of the flu vaccine. There were serious problems about safety of various kinds of vaccines, like the pertussis vaccine. In fact, the pertussis regulatory officer said it was the dirtiest thing put in the human body. That was a pertussis vaccine that was first used in 1935 and remained in use as the primary vaccine up until the 1990s, and was replaced by a subsequent vaccine, which has its own problems. But all of these issues that are going on now around COVID and the COVID vaccines went around on each and every one of the vaccines that existed before. You can find them. You find them in polio. The federal government lost a multi-million-dollar lawsuit because a polio vaccine had made somebody a quadriplegic. And what they did was go back and change the regulations so that the thing that caused the person to become quadriplegic became legal rather than illegal, as it had been when the court ruled on it. We had problems with the measles vaccine. There's a 100% fatal disease that some very small number of children get from encountering the measles vaccine. It's called subacute sclerosing panencephalitis. The kids that get that disease, 100% of them die, and it's traceable directly to the measles vaccine. What turned out to be apparently the research issue was that if you had circulating measles antibody, which meant you didn't need to be vaccinated, but you were vaccinated, all the people who got that SSPE problem had circulating antibodies and then were vaccinated. And it's a very small number of people. But we were dealing with families that whose child was 10 and would be dying by the time they were 12. And if you are dealing with something like that, the fact that it's only 1 in a million or 1 in 10 million does not change the significance of the event for the family and the people involved. And I've always been of the opinion that what you want to do is create as many positive things as you can that have no negative impact. Now, you know, we're constantly told that you can never have no negative impact. But we do have a system legally that is supposed to sort out how you make the decision to risk the lives of some people in society to save the lives of others. What we've got going on in COVID and in most of the vaccine cases that have come up, vaccine issues, is that there's no system in place to make that sorting decision. And so the result that we've got is that the federal government, since there was a thing called the Vaccine Compensation Act that was adopted in by Congress and signed by the president in around 1988. And that act said that if you were harmed by a vaccine, and then they laid out what that meant, you could petition the government for compensation. And under that program since 1988, the federal government has paid over $4 billion to families whose children have been maimed or killed by vaccines. Now, there are folks who say yes, but that's not very many. It's just a small number of families, maybe 2,500 families, maybe 2,500 kids, so on and so forth. Now, there are a couple problems with that story. First of all, we know that the adverse reaction reporting system way understates how many people are harmed by anything. That's not only just vaccines, but anything. Maybe 1 in 100 actually make it to the point of being decided upon. If that were the case, and this is 100 times more dangerous than we've been able to detect, the number of 4 billion goes up pretty high, and the number of children goes up pretty high. This is children because that's who we were vaccinating at that point. Well, you drop something like the pandemic into the middle of a system that makes decisions as badly as that. And by the way, the results of the activity that we did, that was in 70 to 80, and I worked with people both inside and outside of the Division of Biologic Standards and the FDA to work on that, was vaccine regulation was moved from NIH to FDA, ostensibly to be subject to the tools that the Food and Drug Law has. It's always subject to the law itself, but the NIH didn't have any tools to apply that law, and so they weren't applying it. So it got moved to FDA. We got rulings from both, actions from both the Attorney General of the United States castigating the NIH for the way it was regulating vaccines. And we had hearings in Congress where the whole issue of vaccine regulation was very well vetted, and the result was a new process for approving vaccines. That process, in conjunction with the political leadership and so forth, between 1988 and 2016, meant that we were able to handle a large number of issues that came up in the vaccine world, including the fact that there were 3 pandemic potential outbreaks in the United States between 2010 and 2015 that were all contained. Now, there's a lot of contention about those outbreaks, what they meant, how they were defined, who did what, but they were contained. On the pandemic that we're dealing with right now, it was not contained, and there's now, a growing batch of argument that a good deal of the lack of containment was poor medical management. Now, I just want to be very clear that these debates have been going on in the vaccine world for a long time, even before 1970. But they are made so much more vivid and potent when you're talking about 100% of the world's population being drawn into them. And all the products that are on the market right now that are being that are novel vaccines being designed for a novel virus are all on by emergency order. None of them have gone through any of the processes that were designed to create confidence that we looked at all of the risks and all of the benefits and found them all to be balanced in a way that made the benefits outweigh the risks. None of that has been done for these products. In addition, the fundamental premise of the vaccine world and the entire health care world is an informed choice. You're supposed to be given information, and then based on that information, you then decide whether or not you want to partake of whatever's being offered, in this case the vaccine. But, and that's in the law. That's specifically in the law. Any practitioner who is going to give a vaccine to any recipient is supposed to give them all of the pros and cons of that vaccine. And the CDC has actual side effect information sheets on every vaccine, and you can take those. And there's a huge debate about whether the those sheets are comprehensive enough or not, but they do exist. And the law says you're supposed to give that information to anybody who's going to receive a vaccine. But that's not being done right now. You walk into CVS and they give you a free shot. They don't give you a piece of paper before you take the shot, and usually even after, that says the risks you take are these. So that's, again, a violation of the system that we're supposed to be using. In addition, it's very, very clear as medicine learns more and more that something that is called biochemical individuality, the pure individual identity of each medical identity and chemical identity of every individual is unique. And underlying that reality is our premise at Citizens for Health that every person has the right to choose their path to good health. And that means we want them to have the information, the knowledge, and the facts so that they can decide, is this good for me or not? In our current situation, there are, right now, I believe the fifth vaccine is about to come through the emergency review process, emergency release process, but there are over 90 vaccines being developed. And a company like Merck, for example, dropped out of the vaccine development area, and it looks as if they're thinking that it's better to create drugs that will help defeat COVID when it turns up than it is to try to do the vaccine. You put all this together, and what we've got is a very serious problem through the COVID-19, whatever it is. And I say it's a serious problem because something is there, whether it's one of the major things I find peculiar is the argument that what is, in fact, COVID-19, and there's a big debate about that. You've got people arguing that it's just a more virulent flu, and other people arguing that it's a very serious contamination that needs to be dealt with and so forth. My sense is I don't understand why we have to pick one or the other of those. They could all be going on simultaneously. And if you have different ways, different pathways that these assaults are taking place, you might have to have different ways of addressing it. And you might have to have different choices for people. And, again, the informed choice idea is really crucial in this situation. So I put all that together and I say, look, we're in a policy mess of enormous significance. They're now getting, you know, information that, yes, there was a lot of mishandling at the beginning. Too many ventilators were put on people. There was medical mismanagement and so forth. That's being discussed. And we've got this new situation of the younger people getting these cardiac expansion issues. They just had a report come out on saying it's not really a problem. It's only 300 kids out of 20 million doses, and that's not very many. And they were mild, and they'll go away, and so on. And when you start having a world in which there is a group of people who are the only ones who get to make the decisions and everybody else is excluded, I believe you will invariably come up with a bad decision just because people are not in a position to be able to make good decisions on their own without inputs of information and dialogue and understanding and following some kind of pre-established guidelines or rules. If you're setting aside the rules, you got an elite class that's going to make all the decisions for everybody, and then you're going to say everybody should come and do this, you're going to have real problems. And I think we've got real problems. So that's kind of my overview. And I just want to say this has been going on in the vaccine area for a long time, and we just don't have a process for seriously evaluating the pros and cons and the rights and wrongs and the best and the least in how to handle infectious diseases in our current medical framework. So that's my thoughts on that, Peter.
Unbelievable stuff. Well, I've seen, you know, I'm a big consumer of content on the Internet, and I've seen the pharmacists actually take videos. This is in reference to that, hey, we're supposed to tell you the pros and the cons or some of the side effects. I've seen actually videos of pharmacists opening up new vaccine bottles, if you will, and taking out the paper inserts that usually look like a mini Bible that's been folded over like a million times. It's like a really big piece of paper that's been folded over, and you can't even read the stuff. You need to, like, almost like an electron microscope. There's so much words on it, it's almost impossible to read, but they jammed it into something that fits in a small package, and it being almost completely blank. So they're not even providing that stuff. And then we're reading today, and this is the part that's so crazy, we're reading today about the Pfizer or the Moderna being given to the younger boys mostly. Their hearts are enlarging. And then all of a sudden people are saying things like, well, that's okay. Just wait until your symptoms go down, and then you can take the second dose. I'm like, what, are you crazy? Why wouldn't I have a choice at that point to be able to say, you know what, I understand the FDA is putting some warnings on this, but why wouldn't I have the choice to say, you know what, I think I want to pass on this one until there's a little bit more research. Everywhere else on the planet, it seems like I might be able to make that choice, especially related to something that deals with the health of myself or of my family. But this just, it's insanely doesn't make any sense. And I'm just still trying to figure some of this stuff out, Jim. So I don't know if it's a matter of power or money or evil or I don't know what it is, but it just really got me kind of, it's gotten me kind of crazy. And the other thing that I've seen is how polarizing people have become. They're either pro or they're anti-vaccine. And if they're pro, they're really freaking out that people haven't had vaccines. And if they're anti, they're really freaking out that people have had vaccines. And it's causing a lot of psychological challenges. I mean, there's a whole big, besides the physical mess that's going on, maybe, there's the whole psychological mess that's going on. And globally, I don't think I've ever seen anything like this ever before. And I'll leave it at that, and then I'll just just talk about another couple of things that maybe you want to pass this on as well. But, you know, even to the point where I think Biden's administration was going to be giving the Palestinians like 500,000 doses of a certain type of vaccine, and they were almost expired, and they didn't want to take them. And that's also created a ruckus as well. And then somebody from the FDA says, no, don't worry about the expiration date. You could take it anyway. Almost, you know, dismissing it is like, well, expiration dates, what's that? You know, temperature, you know, being outside of the refrigerator, what's that? Now you could take it anyway. I'm like, where are you getting this data from? Like, are you making this stuff up on your own, or what's going on here? So I'll let you comment on either the abundance of vaccine hesitancy or maybe even the psychological problems that are happening.
Well, if you look at the psychological problems as a set, they are a key part of the whole pandemic vaccine reality, and how people feel about these things, who they trust, what course of actions they're going to take, all are affected by things that are not necessarily directly the outcome of science. I mean, that's the way we do things. Even really well knowledgeable people. In fact, sometimes the more knowledgeable people are somewhat more hesitant. I noticed that a hospital, I think it was in Texas, I think over 100 employees resigned rather than take the vaccine. Now, my point is a simple, straightforward point, and that is that the process has been violated on how these things are supposed to be developed according to the rules and principles that we talked about. Now, you know, that we talked about as a society before any of this happened, the premise being that this is an emergency situation and everybody in the world is likely to die if we don't do this, or, you know, it's going to be a very terrible thing. And if we don't do this, then we're going to have real trouble, and it's an emergency, so we can set aside the rules. But the problem I have with that approach is that there is, in fact, a legal system that is set up to examine those kinds of questions. And as an individual and as a society and as communities, we have the right to expect that our government, using its courts as well as its administration and its legislature, but using its courts, can look at something and say, is this thing actually going to address a serious problem that the state has an interest in? Is it going to effectively address it? What is the data that says that if we do this thing, whatever it is, it will effectively address the problem? And then finally, is it the least intrusive way to address that problem? This process was not utilized. It was all bypassed. It was all swept away. So we don't have any place where we can point to and say all the different voices on pros and cons, rights and wrongs, goods and bads about this have been brought to bear in one place, and we have decision makers who looked at it and said, we think this is a good idea, or this is a bad idea, or here's the way to do it. And by all the voices, what I'm talking about is the advocates and the critics. They need to be involved at some place where all of their points of view can be integrated. This is to address the psychological problem. This is to address the problem of confidence and trust and honesty. Do we believe that the government's making the best effort to solve whatever the problem is that we all agree is a problem? And frankly, if you continuously bypass the process, you will not get the public to say, or even most individuals to say, I trust what the government's doing. A lot of individuals will do it, and they'll do it because they don't have any other signal about what they should do. But an equally large number, it seems to me, it looks like about 50-50 on the hesitancy front. Maybe it's 60-40 for vaccines, I don't know. And I suppose there are a lot of people who want to take a shot at winning $1 million, so they'll take the vaccine. But the idea that people are embracing the vaccine with confidence and belief and trust just is not available in our current debate. The society is not doing that. And that's what I see as a procedural problem. It's a policy problem. It's a process problem. You've got 93 vaccines under development. So how do you have a discussion with somebody who says, have you taken the vaccine? I mean, I know many people who are virulently opposed to Pfizer and Moderna who are willing to take some of the other vaccines. I don't know that that's the right decision or not, but I know that the process needs to be set up in such a way that they can be allowed to make those kinds of choices. And there are people who are arguing that if you've got circulating antibody, you don't need to have a vaccine. That needs to be taken into consideration. It needs to be looked at. It needs to be understood. None of the process that we rely on as a society to make decisions has been effectively brought to bear on this question. Instead, we said the Congress has set up a bunch of subject matter experts who know everything there is to know about vaccines and viruses, and we should ask them. I remember somebody told me once that if you were Eisenhower and you're planning to invade Europe and you asked the tank commander what's the best tool to use to invade Europe, you would say tanks. If you asked somebody who was the head of an Air Corps group, you'd say, what's the best way to invade Europe? And they would say, airplanes. You've asked somebody who ran ships, they would say the best way is ships. But somebody had to integrate all of those pieces in order to be successful. And we don't really have any kind of system that allows all the disparate points of view and pieces of information and facts to be brought to bear on what it is that we should be doing here. And so each individual in the society is left to their own devices and their own sources of information. Nobody's vetting anything that that you can have confidence in. In other words, the FDA isn't actually vetting things except to say people aren't falling over dead in the street from the vaccine. It's an emergency. Let's use it. And that's not the process that was designed to be sure that we got safe and effective vaccines into the market. So that the process is failing us, and that is creating an enormous amount of psychological angst, discomfort. We don't even have places to have a serious discussion about all of this. It's all been polarized on how you believe about it, but it's been polarized on where you can talk about it. And that's a psychological problem that is as much of an undermining factor for the society as the actual pandemic itself. So it's important to know that deviating from process can create real problems.
Absolutely.
So that's my thought on that point.
Yep, there you go. So part of my challenge, and I guess as I'm getting older, you get just more knowledge, which is really a bad thing in certain areas because it's just more to pile on whatever pile you want to put it on. But there was just something that happened recently that was really, again, and this has nothing to do with health or anything else like that, but I'm not even sure if you're familiar with this or maybe even follow it closely because you follow so many other things closely. But John McAfee was found dead in his cell in prison in Barcelona, Spain, or outside of Barcelona, Spain, committed suicide. And for those people that knew John McAfee, he certainly didn't have a lot of moral standing. The gentleman was crazy in a lot of ways. But one of the things that he said was, if I ever get found dead in my cell, it was not suicide. I didn't do this to myself. And the amazing thing that I find, and he also, by the way, just so you know, he had a coin that was called Whacked that was done after Jeffrey Epstein was found dead from suicide in his cell, and that's also somewhat suspect. So the crazy part about it is I'm going to make the assumption that he didn't commit suicide, that he was probably suicided, and the idea that these things can still happen in plain view right in front of us is just really scary. And when you go to look for John McAfee on a Google search, and the only reason why I'm using McAfee is because he's the latest and he's a really great example, is if you go look on a Google search for John McAfee, McAfee is how you spell it, and then put in like the word dead, you'll see that the only things you'll find are news sites that pull up. ABC News, CBS News, some Washington, D.C. news thing, a television station over here, another publication over here. It's only authority, quote-unquote, figures. You won't find anybody that's got an opinion. You won't find anybody that's got a conspiracy. You won't find anything about anything. You'll see it's 100% the information delivered is 100% controlled by the search engine. So when the only reason why I mentioned John McAfee is a great example of what you see is what they want you to see. And if you were to ask anybody that's not close to John McAfee or anybody that hasn't really followed him with what he's done with his career or with cryptocurrencies or how he's being investigated and, a charge for tax evasion and things like that, most of the population doesn't even know he was still alive. And so if you ask my wife, she sent me something that says, John McAfee committed suicide. If you ask 99 people, John McAfee committed suicide. You might be able to ask 999 people, tell me about John McAfee. Oh, he just committed suicide. So the narrative is that if we take John McAfee out and then put vaccines in, the narrative has been vaccines are safe and effective. Most people that don't study this stuff don't even know how to answer that question or know how to even ask the questions. And I'm going to switch metaphors here. Rudy Giuliani was just disbarred, if you will. He lost his license. I don't know if that's disbarred yet, but he just had his license suspended in New York because he questioned, among other things, the elections. So if you question things, you lose your license. Or you're being called a kook, or you can't get a job. So the conformity factor is in there, Jim, where they're really the media is forcing people to conform. Your job is forcing you to conform. The airlines are forcing you to conform. And British Airlines, and this is maybe part rumor, maybe part whatever, but the facts are 4 British airline pilots died recently, like within 2 weeks, and all of them had been jabbed. And you know, how much of this stuff can you say is coincidental? And now they're concerned that 90% of the British Airlines pilots have been vaccinated. So if you were going to be a new upcoming pilot, you know, would you want to get vaccinated and be part of British Airlines if 4 of you already have died so far? So there's a lot of confusion here. And the idea that anybody, and I'm somewhat bringing this full circle, might be able to say, you know what, can I just kind of pass on that second jab or that first jab or any jab at all, why can't I just wait until you guys settle this stuff out, still means that I might have to forge my own path as far as employment, travel, where I might be able to go and shop, and who knows where it's going to end. So back to you. I'll let you comment on anything that I just mentioned.
Well, I will go back to my process argument. I followed the McAfee thing, and I followed the situation with Giuliani. I've heard about the pilots. I just want to say that you need to be very, very, very careful, even in what you're saying, Peter, about what you have learned by reading the media.
Right.
I was very interested in the Epstein argument, you know, and I would ask my friends that were, you know, they're called the conspiracy theorists of the ilk that said he didn't kill himself, somebody else killed him. And I'd ask this person, I'd ask that person. I finally asked somebody, and I said, well, what do you think? What's the story? And they said, what makes you think he's dead? Now,
right.
Think about that. Why would you believe that Epstein is dead, given what you just said?
Right.
Why would you believe that McAfee's dead?
Right.
The only reason you believe that is for the same reasons that you're arguing that people erroneously, perhaps, believe that he was suicided or that he killed himself. And so one group of people say, well, they say he killed himself, but actually somebody came in there and killed him. But you know, why can't your mind, as fertile as it is, say, well, hey, you know, somebody came in there and were hired to take him out, bring him out of the plane, put him someplace where he can be safe, you know? Down in South America in the old house that Hitler used to live in. Remember that story?
Right.
See, what I'm saying is that you need to be extremely cautious about what conclusions you draw from the media. Either the way to read the media, in my opinion, is to say, these papers have said that McAfee killed himself. Now, people can draw their own conclusions from that all they want to. But I was very struck by this person who said, well, on the Epstein front, what makes you think Epstein was dead? And then, I don't know. I mean, I have no reason to argue anything, you know, whether he died or he didn't die, whether he killed himself or he didn't kill himself. All I know is what I read in the paper. Now, you take Giuliani. And, you know, you gave a story of Giuliani, which is a media story, and it's not the right story. He lost his license because he presented information to courts that the courts said was false. Now, that is an argument. Now, the media said, well, he was eliminated because he was going around publicly saying that the election had been stolen. What the judges said, and these are judges that made this decision, is that this guy came into our courtroom and he told us a bunch of stuff that was demonstrably false. The way they find out that it's demonstrably false, and they did this, and then there were over 60 cases brought in the courts, is that they said, bring in your evidence. And they brought in the evidence, and the evidence did not support the claims that he was making. That has nothing to do with whether the election was lost or not lost. It has. I mean, stolen or not stolen. What it has to do with is you stand up in the court and you say, I can prove the following things, and then you bring your evidence in. And in this case, what they're saying is not only did it fail to disprove it, but it proved the opposite. That this guy came in there and said a bunch of things, and then when he brought the evidence in to support them, he was telling us something. He was trying us to make a decision that was 180 degrees opposite from the evidence that he brought in. Again, I am not arguing whether he's right or wrong, whether they're right or wrong on the facts of the actual situation. What I am saying is that judges took the license away because they said we cannot rely on this guy. If he's going to come into court and he's going to allege one thing and then bring evidence in that proves 180 degrees of what he said, we can't trust him. Remember, a lawyer belongs to the court. He's a servant of the court. He works for the court. He doesn't work for the clients. He works for the court. The court, somebody comes in and they say, I have a really terrible, terrible, terrible problem. They say, well, we've got these guys that we've recognized with this piece of paper called a license, and the court recognizes them. You should go find one of them because they will come be able and talk to us in terms that we understand because we have a whole system for that. And when you find one of those guys and come back, you know, and they can talk to us in those terms, you'll be in pretty good shape. But you can come yourself if you want, but we're here to tell you, if you don't know how to talk in the vernacular of the lawyers, you're going to have a hard time getting through to us. So then a lawyer comes in and he steps up and he says, A, B, C, D. And they say, great, very interesting, bring us your evidence. And they bring the evidence in, and the evidence is minus A, minus B, minus C, and minus D. And the judges look at this guy and they say, geez, I don't have any idea when he talks to me whether I can believe him or not. I just don't know. And they say, we're going to take your license away because we can't trust you. They are servers of the court. Their job is to work for the court. That's what they do. It's a tough question, and you know Giuliani's lawyers are going to appeal, and they're going to bring in an argument. Their main argument now, they're saying about Giuliani, is that he didn't get a hearing. And the judge's position was get him out of here, and then we'll have a hearing and decide whether he can be brought back in. If you can come here and tell us that he wasn't misrepresenting to the court, i.e. lying to the court, if you can show us that that wasn't true, then we can reinstate it. But we don't want him coming into court or go anywhere in a court and start talking when he's a guy that it looks to us like he's willing to sit in there and present false information. Because the judges have to rely on the lawyers to present honest, straightforward, solid information. Now, whether that's doable, of course, is another question. Is there evidence to support what Giuliani wants to say? And in the legal structure, the 60 courts have said, no, I don't know. I'm not sitting in judgment on whether the election was stolen or not stolen. All I'm saying is all the evidence I have, no one's been able to prove that it was stolen. And they're making the assertions, and they haven't been able to prove it. I can tell you the same assertions were made in 2004, same assertions were made in 2000. Big court hearings in 2004 on almost the identical issues that Trump's raising. The key witness in that case flew his own plane from Washington to Columbus, Ohio for the grand jury hearing or the deposition, I think it was actually. For some reason, his plane crashed and he was killed. Now, again, I don't know what happened to his plane, but I do know that his evidence did not get into the record so that the case never was able to be tried. So what I'm saying is that there's a whole bunch of stuff that goes out there, and you want to be very careful, even when you read the media, to recognize that you're accepting from the media a bunch of stuff that's in the media. And all you need to do to, you know, be confident about, you know, be, you know, manage that is say, oh, the press said that. I mean, I looked up the McAfee situation, and he went all over the world and before he landed up in Spain. And he has lots of charges against him and all kinds of legalities. And, you know, my question, you know, because I'm a curious agnostic. I don't believe what I read, but I'm curious and want to read everything. I'm very curious. When I looked at the McAfee stuff and he ended up in Barcelona, I know Barcelona is fairly very volatile these days. I have no idea, you know, which faction of the Barcelona world had him under control. I don't know. Maybe the other one came and got him out and took him. I could make up 10 conspiracies about what happened to him based on what I know from the media. None of which I could ever provide any evidence for. And that's the trick. That's the trick. The issue is not, can you think up a clever story about what actually happened? The question is, what evidence do we have for it? So I've been very interested in, curious agnostic point of view about whatever happened to Epstein's female partner's father. One of the richest men in the world, and somehow or another they fell off a yacht in the Mediterranean and drowned. And I'm saying to myself, rich guys don't fall off yachts. I mean, that's the first thing that came into my mind. So, you know, was he pushed? Is he actually still alive somewhere? I mean, if you're facing, as McAfee was, extradition in the United States, which had just been approved the day before this happened, for facing a 30-year jail sentence with a whole batch of money being sought by the IRS, and that's what you're facing, and you've got the resources, couldn't you find a little team that could break you out of prison and carry you off to some very nice place where they couldn't find you? I mean, he left the United States a couple of times before to avoid paying income tax.
He also faked a heart attack one time when he was being arrested and got away with that as well.
Well, all I'm saying is I'm not saying any of these things are true, including I'm more than happy to be skeptical about whether he died, whether he killed himself in jail or not. That's fine. I'm, you know, people believe that. That's, you know, he did or he didn't. That's okay. I don't have to have a position on that. I always say having an opinion is costly. You know, it takes a lot of time and energy, especially when you have to defend it. I don't have an opinion on him. But I looked into the whole story, and I'm saying to myself, my friend that said, well, what makes you think Epstein's dead? I mean, hey, that's as good a conspiracy theory to throw into the mix as any. I don't have to believe any one of them. They're fun. I like to read conspiracy story books. I mean, they're very important. I had a very important lesson when I came to Washington originally. Maybe I'll just throw this one out there, and then we can see if we're done. But I came to Washington and worked with Nader for 4 years, and then roughly 4 years, and then went to a law firm. Very, very small law firm, two very very good Washington staffers and lobbyists and so forth, and I was in this firm, and the senior partner was one of the leading Kennedy conspiracy theorists, and he had really worked hard, and he had lots of really fascinating evidence about the Kennedy assassination. And I came into that firm, and he said, I'm going to tell you one thing when you come here to work with us, and that is, do not get interested in the Kennedy assassination in any way other than as an avocation that you're interested in. But do not get involved in it because the story is a heartbreaker. He told me that they were going to have hearings in the House, and that when those hearings were completed, it would be established that Lee Harvey Oswald did not act alone, and that would break open the entire case. So what happened is they did have those hearings. You can go read them. You read them online. They did conclude that Lee Harvey Oswald did not act alone, and nothing happened. And his point about the story being a heartbreaker was right there. There it was. I mean, an investigative committee of the House of Representatives with witnesses and lawyers and everything it could possibly have concluded Lee Harvey Oswald did not act alone. And nothing. Nothing. It was like throwing a teensy-weensy pebble into the Atlantic Ocean. And that was, to me, a very stark presentation of the heartbreaker question. And I'm telling you, you know, I've watched this vaccine issue since, as I said, it was 1969, started in working on it in late 69 and 70. And I'm telling you, it's a heartbreaker in terms of the fact that from that day on, there has been no serious application of the principles that we're supposed to be using legally to work our way through making these kinds of policies. There have been some fits and starts and some efforts, and as I said, three potential pandemics were nipped in the bud between 2000 and 2016. That didn't happen this time. Again, that's, you know, I don't know if somebody purposely wanted to push out the vaccine or the virus or not. I don't know. There's this big argument now going on about the laboratory. Remember that up until about 6 weeks ago, if you said the virus leaked from the laboratory, you got taken down off the website, off the internet. Now everybody's running around saying, we have to find out, did the virus leak from the laboratory, yada, yada, yada. And you know, dozens of questions are going to be thrown, appearing like that. So you got to watch out for, you know, just realize the media is telling the story. My father was a newspaper man, a police reporter. I'd read what was in the paper, and he was an afternoon paper guy, and I'd read what was in the paper, and then I would sit down at dinner, and he would explain to me what wasn't in the paper. And like, for example, most PR guys are hired for the primary purpose of keeping the names of their principals out of the paper. That's what they do. And my father was always fond of saying, look, man bites dog is a story. Dog bites man is nothing. And so if you can credibly put a man bites dog story on the front page of a newspaper, you'll sell more newspapers. And that's what newspapers are for. And that's what the evening news is for. And that's what the media is for. The media is for selling things so that they can make money, so that that money can be used to buy things that they want to buy. And the notion of the story is crucial, because if a man bites dog, people will read. Dog bites man, nobody will read. And every single story you see in the paper is some form of man bites dog. Now it's true, there are good journalists, they work hard, they gather good information. A good story that proves with facts that man bites dog is a great story. Unfortunately, you can win the paper and win the audience with a headline that has no story behind it. And we have lots and lots of those going on right now. So anyway, I've just... You know, just a little bit of rambling there, but you said you talked about McAfee, and I'm just saying, you know, like my friend said, if we're gonna wallow in conspiracy theories, what makes you think he's dead?
So true, and it is so true. If there was ever anybody that could probably schmooze some guards into charismatically helping him to get away, it could be McAfee, or there's a whole bunch of angles
At the peak of his wealth, he was worth $100 million, and I can tell you can get guards to do a whole lot for something a lot less than $100 million.
And
you're over there in Spain, you've got a lot of really interesting people, and they do things that are quite amazing in the shadows of society. And I don't think finding somebody that could escape him from prison would be that impossible. But I'm not arguing in any way, shape, or form that that's possible. I'm just saying that it's right there with the story that he didn't that someone killed him.
I bet you I
could find the people that would be much more interested in kidnapping him and breaking him out of jail than going and killing him, who were of the ilk that work in the shadows of society.
Right.
But I mean, I don't care. I mean, it's not that to me is not a story that I want to be involved in. I'm happy to watch the facts and see what comes out. If anybody cares, I'm interested in knowing. I'd like to know, you know, did this rich guy fall off the yacht? I mean, I've been interested in that ever since I read it in the paper the first time. And rich guys don't fall off yachts. I mean, that's
true.
But he did. So, okay. And then look, the world is in such a world. Maybe he did fall off the yacht. I don't know.
He could have.
But then
rich guys. He could have.
Then his daughter turns up as the partner of one of the great scam artists of all time, Jeffrey Epstein. And so you say to yourself, you know, what's going on here? What's this all about? What's happening?
Yep.
But, again, you know, that's the stuff you want to watch when you watch MI5 or NCIS or something like that on TV, and you watch them and chuckle and amuse yourself at what the writers are able to come up with, and you do not, in my view, I don't anyway, file it in my Here's the Truth file. That file is very thin, the Here's the Truth file.
Right, and that's one of the reasons why I brought up McAfee, because if you look under his name, you're being told by everybody, news reporters all over the world, newspapers, that he committed suicide. So if you eat what they feed you, you may or may not be eating the truth.
Yeah,
so great point.
You ate the fact that he's dead.
I didn't complete my thought. I was trying to just make the point of that the media is telling you what to think. So in reference to vaccines, all you'll read is they're safe and effective, they're safe and effective, they're safe and effective, and nobody really knows.
Yeah, but I'm going to say one more thing, and that is that if you learn how to read the media and read the written media and watch the electronic media, if you learn how to do that, you can find out all kinds of things. I mean, I read the mainstream McAfee stuff, and I looked at it, and I could say to myself, yeah, right. That's another one of those stories that's got all kinds of other aspects to it that are not being presented here. It's just filled with stuff in the mainstream media stories. You can look at it.
Absolutely.
And if you recognize that they're selling you something, and you look at it and say, okay, they're selling you, let's look at it from the other angle. What do we get?